Even as the job market has been relatively strong and the overall U.S. economy has been recession-free for close to a decade, wages for people who are not at the top of the salary chain have been less than impressive. And that has made income inequality increasingly dramatic, drawing comparisons to the Great Depression, which is never a good reminder. To learn more about what's going on, I'm joined via Skype by Mark Price. He's a labor economist at the Keystone Research Center in Pennsylvania. So, Mark, let's start with this. What are you watching most closely when it comes to income inequality?
The inequality trends that most economists focus on really are long-term trends. And so what you're seeing today is that the share of income captured by the top 1% of families is higher than it's been in almost 80 years. In particular, you know, in a state like Arizona, the top 1% today take home about 17.5% of all income, which back in the early 1970s, that figure was well less than 10%. So the top have really benefited a lot from economic growth, and that's showing up most directly in our metrics for income. But we now have a variety of other data, particularly data on wealth concentration, that shows, again, that we're starting to see a rising share of wealth being captured by a pretty small fraction of the population. And so that's the broad trend. And certainly when you look at this economy, we're all very happy to see the unemployment rate's low. We are finally beginning to see somewhat healthy growth in wages. It's clear by most people's expectations that that growth has been quite slow. And so really, when you look at this economy, the really sort of disappointing aspect of it is just it's taken so long for wage growth to pick up that really it's these good times that we need really healthy growth in wages for folks in the middle and the bottom to make up for what they lose when the economy's weaker during recession. So the long-term trends remain sort of with us, and the economy in this period of expansion just hasn't quite delivered enough of a punch to really break those long-term trends of just a rising concentration of income.
Well, so not to freak everybody out, but do these trends, do these numbers remind you of what we saw prior to the Great Depression?
They do. Again, I think appropriately, you're absolutely right. We don't want to worry anyone that there's another recession coming or something as bad. But inequality, you have to go back to 1928 to find income concentration, at least in what we call market incomes. This is incomes for wages and all the income that we make in market transactions in the economy. You have to go back to 1928 to find a greater share of income in the hands of the top 1%. And so often, folks sort of remember that 1928 is sort of the very tail end of what's sometimes called the Gilded Age, right? And an age of robber barons, of captains of industry, really accumulating a lot of wealth and a lot of power. And we are now seeing income concentration, at least, and certainly now we're beginning to see data on wealth concentration that are approaching levels that haven't been seen since that earlier era of sort of the Gilded Age. And sort of, so one way to worry is that we do seem to be in the midst of another sort of new Gilded Age, at least in our metrics for income inequality.
We're almost feels like there's that pendulum swinging because there are many people unhappy with the current policy. So let's go back further another way. Does that concern you as an economist, the idea that there are gradual changes that should be made in order to help get rid of this income inequality or at least lessen it? And maybe the ideas tend to swing us from one side to the other.
No, I think that's a very good perception on your part. When we look back at 1928 and what came after, there was a deep Great Recession, and some policies emerged out of that era. The business sector struggled in particular with credibility. Captains of industry didn't kind of come out of the Great Depression with a lot of respect, particularly bankers. And you end up with an era of increasing unionization. You end up with the establishment of a minimum wage, which then also then rises over time. You end up with very high tax rates, up over 70% on the highest income earners. And that certainly is widely believed to be a key reason why in an earlier era in America from about 1945 to 1973, you have what we'd sometimes talk about as broadly shared prosperity, that incomes grew at the top, in the middle, and the bottom, and roughly at the same rate, which is sort of surprising. So it doesn't mean that, a janitor at General Motors made as much as the CEO of General Motors, just that the janitor's income also grew in proportion to what was happening for CEOs. So it was an era of really broadly shared prosperity. And I think you're beginning to see some conversations, certainly in the political realm, where people are raising questions. Have we cut taxes on the top earners too much? Are there things we should be doing to tax wealth? You know, for instance, we've been making cuts to the estate tax. Should we consider, for instance, a wealth tax on households with wealth over, you know, $10 million? So you are absolutely beginning to see sort of a pushback on these trends, which is, I think, what you would expect to happen. It looks very much in the data like these income trends are very unsustainable, that you just can't have a situation, for instance, where we go from, say, you know, the top 1% earning 20% of all income to earning 50. It's just not, I think, politically sustainable. And so you're beginning to see, I think, conversations which are healthy about, well, what are the things we can do to restrain this growth and inequality, and restrain them in a way that's actually good for the broader economy. So not just good for the middle class and the poor, but really good for all of us.
That is Mark Price, a labor economist at Keystone Research Center in Pennsylvania. Mark, thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Hey, Steve, thank you.